Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have another great show for you today. First, a suspect has been named in the matter of Brianna Kufer. Now, jury selection begins tomorrow regarding the officers charged with violating George Floyd's civil rights. The reward for information regarding Summer Wells continues to grow. What is happening regarding Orrin and Orson West? After all, it's been 1 year since their disappearance. Should we just blame autopilots? Another NFL player is in a little bit of trouble, and he managed to do it all while being naked. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Wait till you hear this. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First, I want to thank everybody for joining us last night for our Tuesday night live after hours. Can't believe that thing went for 3.5 hours. Where did the time go? Now, that also means we didn't do our Patreon, so you're right. I owe you a Patreon show soon. All right, I'll make it up to you, I promise. All right, now if you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And always remember that if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us by downloading Crime Talk with Scott Reich on any of your podcasting apps. All right, let's get to the docket. Today, Wednesday, January 19th. First on the docket, the case of the UCLA graduate student, Brianna Kufer. Now, before everybody gets all fired up about the pronunciation of the name, let me tell you what I've done. The name is spelled K-U-P-F-E-R. I watched four pronunciations of the name, but the news organization that interviewed the family pronounced it Kufer. So I believe they're the best way to make sure we get the pronunciation correct. So save all of your hate responses and phonetic spelling, but I'm pretty sure we got it right this time. All right. For those of you who do not know, Brianna Kufer was working alone in a luxury furniture store called the Croft House in an upscale neighborhood of Fairfax, which is in Los Angeles, when a man entered and stabbed her. Now, 20 minutes later, a customer discovered the 24-year-old architectural design student, but by that time, the police had arrived and she had already passed. Now, police said the male suspect is believed to be homeless and fled through the back door before calmly walking down the alley. He did not apparently know the victim. And the LAPD said in a statement, the suspect is described as a black male, unknown age, tall, thin, wearing a dark hoodie, sunglasses, a white N95 mask, dark skinny jeans, dark shoes, and carrying a backpack. Now, based upon evidence discovered by the detectives, the suspect is believed to be homeless. So the police have actually been able now to identify it, and the local authorities believe that the person they are looking for is a gentleman by the name of Sean Laval Smith. He is 31, and he is considered to be armed and dangerous. Now, Smith is considered to be a career criminal and shockingly was out on bond. And wait till you hear what the bond was there in Los Angeles. $1,000. Now, apparently the case was a misdemeanor, but given his criminal history, you would think that it would be a heck of a lot higher. But nobody has any accountability apparently out there in California, so it doesn't surprise me at all. Police state that they believe that Smith is likely traveling across Southern California via public transportation, and authorities said that Kufer had texted a friend shortly before she was killed. At approximately 1:36 p.m. in the afternoon, Brianna was working in the store all by herself, and she sent a text to a friend letting her know that there was someone inside the store that was giving her a bad vibe. You always got to trust your instincts, ladies and gentlemen. Trust your instincts. Now, prior to identifying Smith as a suspect, officials released surveillance footage that allegedly showed Smith at a nearby 7-Eleven shortly after the murders occurred, where he was buying a vaping pen. Because, you know, after you've stabbed somebody, you gotta take the edge off, I guess. What the hell is going on in California? I just do not get it. All right, Next on the docket, George Floyd again. Jury selection begins Thursday in federal court against the former police officers, Mr. Koenig, Mr. Thomas Lane, Mr. Tao Tao. As you may recall, these are the three former Minneapolis police officers who were with Derek Chauvin when he pinned George Floyd to the street, ultimately resulting in his death. The trial is expected to be complex as the prosecutors try to prove that each officer willingly and knowingly violated Mr. Floyd's constitutional rights. Now, Koenig, Lane, and Tao are charged with willfully depriving Floyd of the right to be free from an officer's deliberate indifference to his medical needs. The indictment says the three men saw Floyd clearly needing medical care and failed to aid him. Now, in the federal case, all three former officers are broadly charged with depriving Floyd of his civil rights while acting under color of law, which is basically governmental authority. The trial will be more complicated than the state trial because prosecutors have the difficult task of proving that they willfully violated Mr. Floyd's constitutional rights, unreasonably seizing him and depriving him of his liberty without due process. Now, while the state would try to prove the officers helped Chauvin commit murder or manslaughter, federal prosecutors must show that they failed to intervene. Essentially, prosecutors must prove that the officers knew what they were doing was wrong, but did it anyway. As you may recall, Officer Chauvin, former Officer Chauvin to be more accurate, was convicted last April of state charges of murder and manslaughter and is serving a 22.5-year sentence. And then in December, he pled guilty to the federal civil rights violations against Mr. Floyd. Now, unfortunately, this case will not be televised because it will be in federal court. So we'll see how the information disseminates from the courtroom so that we can bring you the most accurate facts regarding this particular case. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, Summer Wells. Yep, another missing kid case that no one seems to have any information about. Well, the reward for information regarding the disappearance of Summer Wells is now up to $73,000. The total comes from two large donations of $25,000 and $10,000 received at the beginning of the reward fund. And the rest of the money is made of contributions made directly to the bank or mailed to the church, which was mailed directly to the Church Hill Rescue Squad, which is in charge of the fund. As you may recall, 5-year-old Summer Wells went missing from her home in Hawkins County there in Tennessee in June of 2021. The Church Hill Rescue Squad and its board of directors hopes that extending the reward fund will drive people to provide any credible leads or tips. And these funds will either be dispensed to someone who comes forward with credible tips or to the Child Advocate Center as the stated and determined in the reward fund when it was created. The reward fund has been extended until June 15th of 2022. At that time, it will go under review by the board of directors. Somebody knows something, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get to it. Which is kind of why we're talking about Orrin and Orson West. That's right. It's been a year, ladies and gentlemen. 1 year later, there are still no clues in the mysterious disappearance of the young brothers, Orrin and Orson West. The little boys went missing from their home of their adoptive parents in California City, California, shortly before Christmas of 2020. Since then, police had uncovered very little clues, and police so far have not confirmed whether anyone is actually a suspect. The police have said that the adoptive parents were asked to take a lie detector test, but he did not say whether they actually ended up taking the test. Police have also said that the Wests have been cooperative. They have since relocated back to Bakersfield, which is also where the West boys' biological mother lives. The biological mother has assisted in the search as well. Now, California City and the Bakersfield Police, along with the FBI, are still actively investigating the case, they say. And the Bakersfield Police took over the investigation in March of 2021. Now, anyone with a tip is asked to contact them through any form of communication as necessary. As you may recall, both of the West were reported missing on December of 2020, right before Christmas. Now, the father said that he was outside, the mother was inside sleeping, and believed that the father was watching the kids, and the father believed that they were in the backyard when they were missing. They apparently searched the neighborhood. Nothing was found as it related to the boys. They literally just disappeared, apparently. No one's been charged. No one has any information, and everybody just acts like it's no big deal. This is one of those cases where I'm really surprised there is not more interest in the search for these young kids. But as we've seen in this case, as well as Summer Wells, these children literally are just disappearing. But someone, somewhere knows something. Next on the docket, should we just blame the autopilot? Well, a Tesla driver involved in an accident in California over 2 years ago is now being formally charged with two counts of vehicular manslaughter. So on December 29th of 2019, a Tesla Model S left a freeway and ran a red light in Los Angeles suburb, striking a Honda Civic and killing two people. The driver, Kevin George Aziz Riyadh, he was 27, was charged in October with two counts of vehicular manslaughter by the Los Angeles County prosecutors. Now, Riyadh has pled not guilty and is free on bail while the case is pending. The case is somewhat groundbreaking, as it appears Riyadh will be the first person to be charged with a felony count in the United States while utilizing semi-autonomous driving technologies. Now, investigators have confirmed that the vehicle was using autopilot at the time of the accident. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration put out this statement in regards to this incident. The NHTSA reminds the public that no commercially available motor vehicle today can drive itself. Whether a L2 automated driving system is engaged or not, every available vehicle requires the human driver to be in control at all times, and all state laws hold the human driver responsible for operation of the vehicle. Now, certain advanced driving assistant features can promote safety by helping drivers avoid crashes and mitigate the severity of the crashes that occur. But as with all technologies and equipment on motor vehicles, drivers must use them correctly and responsibly. Now, while Tesla Autopilot is an advanced driving assistance system, it still requires the driver to remain attentive, and drivers must be prepared to take over at any time, which requires them to remain just as vigilant as if they were driving the vehicle themselves. Now, Riyadh has a preliminary hearing scheduled for February 23rd. We'll see how this case proceeds. The bottom line is, if you're the driver of a car, just like whether you're the pilot of an airplane, and you can't blame the autopilot if something goes wrong, you're ultimately responsible for what that vehicle does or fails to do. Now, an NFL player from the Cleveland Browns, a guy by the name of Malik McDowell, well, he was arrested earlier this week in Florida for allegedly attacking a deputy after being spotted naked near a children's learning center. Huh, I wonder if that gave somebody pause. Of course it did. Well, video surveillance revealed that the 25-year-old McDowell, naked, exposing his sexual organs on the learning center's property while they were in session. As the Broward County Sheriff explains, they approached McDowell on the curb. McDowell reportedly went after the deputy with a closed fist. And in the incident report filed by the deputy, he said the defendant intentionally rammed his body into the officer and began swinging closed fist punches at the officer. The officer described the punches as extreme aggression, with at least one strike hitting the officer on his right eye and temple area. Now, McDowell continuously hit the deputy before running away and being tased. McDowell's attorney claimed that someone may have given him something that altered his behavior. Mr. McDowell was arrested and charged with aggravated battery, resisting an officer with violence, and public indecent exposure. He was given a $25,000 bond on the aggravated battery charge and $1,000 each on the violence and public exposure charges. The Browns said in a statement, "We are aware of the very concerning incident and arrest involving Mr. McDowell and are in the process of gathering more information. We understand the severity of this matter and our thoughts and well-being for all involved, and we'll continue to have no further comment at that time, which is code for we're going to look at it, and if he's a really good player and we really need him, I'm sure this is something that we can work around, and if he's going to get cut anyway next year, we're going to set him free. And why is an NFL player using something that's going to alter his mind that much? You would think that they would stay away from those mind-altering substances. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. I love this story, okay? The Monroe Police Department in Louisiana reported trying to pull over a 2006 Chevy Impala who was traveling with their high beams on. Now, the Impala led officers on a lengthy pursuit, reaching speeds of 60 miles per hour in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. The driver, who was identified as Alan Seabury, ran through six stop signs before stopping in front of the home. He stepped out of the car holding a cheeseburger. Mr. Seabury, upon exiting the vehicle, told him that he couldn't stop because his brakes were out and, well, he wanted to finish his cheeseburger that he had just purchased. Mr. Seabury, we've all been there. We know how that is. When you got the munchies, you're eating in the car. We've all been there driving with the steering wheel, Coke in one hand, a burger in the other. You don't need these type of interruptions. I've been there, Mr. Seabury. I feel your pain. But today, you're our dumb criminal contestant of the day because, frankly, that was the worst excuse ever to the police officers. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.